It is 7:45 on a Saturday morning. That means it's time for a wine chat with our friend Jack Farrell from Haskell's. Good morning, Jack.
Hi there, Denny.
How are you doing?
I'm doing just great, and I hope you're doing the same.
I am. Thank you very much. I have to real fast. I know you'll have other topics, but I stopped in at the downtown Minneapolis Haskell's this past week, a few days ago. I was just browsing and taking advantage of the sale, etc. And I'm around by the Cabernet wall there, and all of a sudden I hear this booming voice, and I think, "Oh Lord, don't take me now! I want to buy that bottle of Malbec yet." And it was your son Ted, and we had a nice chat. And he pointed out this Malbec that you guys have talked about, and I'm trying to remember it in that.
A very big.
Yes,
isn't that good?
It not only is it good, it's so reasonably priced.
Yeah, it's a real bargain for people that like Malbec. And I think, and you've heard me say this, that there isn't a wine in the world that goes better with barbecue sauce than Malbec. The sweet tanginess of a barbecue sauce seems to just blend beautifully with that Malbec. And a Gary Bay is a wonderful property. It's owned by the same family that owns Lafite Rothschild in France, which is one of the first growths of the Bordeaux region, and they put the same care and affection into this wonderful bottle of wine, yet it's very, very affordable.
Oh, excellent, yes. Well, what else are we going to talk about?
We have several topics to talk about, Denny. First, a lot of people have asked me about this new tariff on French wine and also on Scotch whiskey, and yes, it's a fact of life. Fortunately for most of us, most of the pipeline is filled for the holidays, so you won't see any increase in anything. You will on Nouveau Beaujolais because that's coming in the middle, towards the end of November, and that'll be affected by the 25% tariff. The tariff, you know, was mandated by the World Trade Organization because they felt that Europe was unfair with subsidies to Airbus. And this is our way of taking care of Boeing. It doesn't make much sense to me, but we're the consumer and we're going to pay. The problem is going to be with scotches, really. The pipeline on scotches was just starting to fill up for the holidays, and particularly expensive scotches, and there are tons of those. I mean, I couldn't believe a friend of mine wanted a very good bottle of scotch. And I went and looked at just what we have. We have them as high as $5,000 a bottle. I couldn't believe it. But it's a fact. And that's, you know, these aged scotches. As a matter of fact, one of the scotches, McCullen 60-year-old, just was sold at auction in London for 1.3 million pounds, which is about $1.6 million. One bottle of scotch. I don't know who in the world must have lost their mind to spend that kind of money on a bottle of scotch. But these tariffs are real. They're going to affect Italian hard cheeses. Won't affect something like Gorgonzola, but it's definitely going to affect Italian Parmesan and any of the real good hard cheeses from Italy. And it will affect French wines, and we don't know how long it'll be on. Everybody is making all sorts of efforts to tone this down a bit to the fact where some of the people are notifying the government that the bottles and the corks and the cardboard boxes and the wooden boxes, those shouldn't be taxed, and they're removing that cost, so all that's taxed is the raw wine. So they're making an effort, both on this side and the other side, to ameliorate some of this, but the fact of life is that French wines are going up 25%, all scotch from Scotland is going to go up 25%, and your Italian hard cheeses are going to go up 25%, and it's just something I guess we're going to have to live with. Fortunately, in all those departments, we have American substitutes that can kind of fill in for the time being till things settle down. The other question I had was, are there any good Oregon wines under $20? Yes, indeed there is. There's at least a couple of them. There's one called Second Growth. That's a Willamette Valley Pinot Noir. It's under $20, and believe me, it is as delicious a Willamette Valley Pinot Noir as you'll find. It is just great. The other one is Willamette Valley Pinot Noir, whole cluster Pinot Noir. It also is under $20, and it is a delicious. When they say whole cluster, that means when they're fermenting it, they throw the whole cluster into the fermentation instead of just the individual berries. It gives the wine, they say, a lot more life to it because those stems and pips stay in the wine and emit a little more tannin to the wine, thus enabling that wine to age a little longer. And some people swear by it gives the wine more fruit. Well, whatever it does, it's a good way to make wine, that's for sure. And those whole cluster, Willamette Valley, Pinot Noir, under $20. So those are two, Second Growth and Willamette Valley, that are under $20 that I think you'll find very, very pleasing. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about Pinot Gris, but before I do that, I thought I would touch on another very topical thing that I've had lots of phone calls about, and that is these California wine wildfires that are in the vineyard lands up near Geyserville. Well, generally, most of the harvest is done there, so it will. The fires won't impact the wine because harvest is done. They're safely in stainless steel vats, etc. However, you know, the vineyard buildings are at risk, and that's a problem. And if the wines haven't been picked, smoke does impart a flavor to the grapes, and sometimes they'll just have to pass over a whole vineyard if it's been inundated with smoke. Fortunately, wine grape roots are very long and very deep, and they're very, very sturdy. And sometimes even a fire in a field, if it isn't too severe a fire, won't damage the vines for the next year. I mean, it certainly will cut down on the yield, but the vines will come back because the roots are so deep and strong. But anyhow, our thoughts and prayers are with so many friends of ours who have houses and vineyard buildings are at risk. But as I say, as far as the wine goes, no one need worry about deleterious effects of the smoke on the wine because it would only affect unpicked grapes that are hanging in clusters on the vines, and that they have to have a lot of smoke to affect that. And if it did, they would just pass on that vineyard for the year. The other thing, of course, is next week we have Halloween, and someone asked for a Halloween wine, a great wine to refer to people, and I'd say that's Culprit. Culprit is a red blend from Napa Valley. It has on the label what looks like a gargoyle. It is the Culprit, and it's a delicious wine. It's under $15, and it'd be a great fun wine to have for Halloween. Now, when I was talking about Oregon wines, I was asked, what's the difference between Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio? Absolutely nothing. It's the same grape type. It's just the difference is where it's grown. And that makes a big, big difference. Pinot Grigio is a wonderful wine with lemon, lime, pear, apple on the nose. Depending on where the wine is grown, Pinot Noir can take on even honey-toned and floral aromas. It's a wonderful wine. We've talked about Pinot Grigio for a long time. In my opinion, it makes a fabulous aperitif wine if you're having a big party and it's a dinner party. It's a great wine to have beforehand. Italian Pinot Grigio is usually dry with very good acidity. French Pinot Gris is sort of fleshy and has a little bit note of botrytis to it. And botrytis is when grapes turn to raisins and become real intense. And American Pinot Gris is got more exaggerated fruit flavors with less acidity than its European counterparts. For the most part, Pinot Grigio is very dry. Alsatian Pinot Grigio is usually a little on the softer side. The characteristics of Pinot Gris, as I say, are limes, apples, lemon, aromas, honeysuckle, ginger, spice. Usually the acidity is medium to medium high. Serving temperature should be about 45 degrees. Pinot Gris and food pairing, meat pairing goes very, very well. Particularly what I happen to like with Pinot Gris from Oregon is clams and oftentimes oysters as well. Although I love Chablis with oysters, some of that Pinot Gris is really terrific. It also goes well with oily fish like trout. And with different spices, Pinot Gris can be absolutely wonderful, particularly fennel and tarragon. With cheese pairings, I'd use small cheeses. And of course, where Pinot Gris really shines, in my opinion, is with any kind of vegetarian food. It just goes perfectly with it. You know, there's a lot of Pinot Grigio grown all over the world, Italy is on top. It has about 30,000 acres, followed surprisingly by the United States, where we have almost 20,000. In Germany, they got about 12,000. France, about 5,000, 6,000. New Zealand, and the others all have under 5,000. Australia has a little more, about 7,000 or 8,000. But Pinot Gris is here to stay, and Pinot Gris, G-R-I-S, is the exact same grape. The differences, of course, as I say, is the terroir where it's grown, and those differences are tremendous. I remember the first time I tasted an Oregon Pinot Gris, it was so creamy and wonderful. I think it was Willa Kinsey. This is probably 35 years ago, and they were just opening up their vineyard, and we went up and tasted it. I said, I've never tasted Pinot Grigio like this. He said, well, we're not going to call it Pinot Grigio. We're going to call it Pinot Gris. And I asked, why was that? And he said, well, because the grapes are kind of gray, and they are sort of gray. And Pinot Gris did taste different to me than Pinot Grigio, but it was basically what the wine picked up from the terroir, because it's the exact same grape type. So I hope I've answered the question on the difference between Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio. There absolutely is none. It just depends on the part of the world where the wine was grown, and the style of the winemaker. It's a little like Chardonnay or Cabernet. You can have a Bordeaux from France and a Cabernet from California, and they're similarities, but they're totally different, and we all know that.
All right. Well, what was the name, Jack? I know we have to run, of the Halloween suggestion wine?
The Culprit.
The Culprit, yes.
C-U-L-P-R-I-T. It's a red blend, and it is delicious, and it makes a great Halloween wine because it looks like a Halloween mask on the label.
I got to pick some up today. Well, I'll tell you what, I know exactly where I'm going to find that. And if you need help, let's say, pairing wine with and a certain kind of food that Jack mentions from time to time, get to Haskell's.
Indeed. The folks at Haskell's love to talk about wine. They love to pair wine. They love to let you taste wine. Stop in. We've been doing this for over 85 years. And believe me, we've gotten pretty good at it. The folks at Haskell's can't cook the meal, but they can indeed make the meal by picking the perfect wine to accompany whatever you're going to prepare. And best of all, they're going to help you pick a wine that won't cost too much. There's a Haskell's near you where you can save big dollars on wine, as we're in the middle of our fall sale right now. There's a Haskell's in Bloomington. There's a Haskell's in Excelsior off of 35. There's a Haskell's in Faribault. Our Maple Grove Super Cellar is not to be missed. The wall there has 16,000 bottles of wine in it. In downtown Minneapolis, there's free parking on Saturday and Sunday. At Minnetonka, there's a store. At Ridgedale, Plymouth, St. Paul's, Highland Village, Stillwater, White Bear Lake, and Woodbury, too. If you can't come in, go to Haskell's.com. Or, don't forget, we do deliver. And Haskell's are indeed the wine people, and we love to talk about wine, so come on in and talk about wine with the folks at Haskell's.
Sounds like a good deal to me. Jack, we'll talk 1 week from today, I hope.
Denny, I'm going to look forward to that very much.
Thanks so much. Jack Farrell from Haskell's.